This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
MPR wants to hear from you, the listener. How can we improve your experience? What are we doing well? What can we do better? Head to mpr.nz and click on the listener survey button to be taken to a short series of questions that will help us do better. You'll also go in the draw to win a $50 Cafe Royale voucher. That's mpr.nz or find the link on our Facebook page.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Keith Clark,
Jane Bolton,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now Keith, you were we got as far as you being a principal of a school in Blenheim.
Yes, a five-teacher school with about 240 or 250 children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The children were a very mixed group because we had several Woodburn pilot children there and a lot of a working class group there, middle
when
class.
When you say Woodburn pilot?
Woodburn pilots.
Air Force base.
Air Force people,
oh,
yes.
Okay.
Bristol freighter pilots, those kind of people.
Yep.
And a mixture of farmers and orchardists. Mm. Some of the children I taught are now, one is a millionaire with cherries, mm-hmm. growing cherries, another's a millionaire that's been growing
grapes,
tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Another one's a millionaire in a grape mm-hmm. area. So they're it's interesting. One was the mayor, one was the local undertaker, and we had one who
so a lot stayed there.
A musician.
Yeah.
And so just an interesting group of children. Yeah. And as I said earlier, I took these children through for 3 years,
mm-hmm.
From standard 2, 3, and 4. And we became a family.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the inspectors, when they came round at one stage, said to me, "We will not split these children up. They've become so much a group that work together." And so when they went on to intermediate, they kept them as a class. They didn't separate them up as they normally did. So interesting group of children in that they virtually told me what to do half the time. But I used to work them pretty hard during the week. And often we'd go out on a picnic on a Friday. We'd climb up into the Wither Hills, or we'd, at one stage we went down to the whaling station.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Wellington for a week in exchange with a friend there. And so we did all sorts of things as a group together. The school we had a swimming pool and a nice native section, and
Who cared for the swimming pool?
The caretaker. We had a caretaker that did all that for us.
And that had all the pumps and filters and chemicals and.
I wouldn't say too much of that.
No.
It was just a big concrete pool.
That was right.
And so what colour was the water for?
Well, it was occasionally a bluey colour.
Yes.
But anyway, we enjoyed it there. We had a second child there, Donald, and that was great. And we built a lovely little house, just under 1,000 square feet, which was our pride and joy. And we were able to finance it because I'd paid cash for the section, and we had enough money to put it down, a good deposit on getting a house built, and then state advances at that stage we could get a loan at 5%. So
Was that because you were a teacher or because it was a public service.
And okay. So...
Was 5% a good interest rate then?
It was a good interest rate at that stage, yes. Mm. And then, of course, Leslie had her mum and dad and the big farm only about 20 miles away in those days. And so we were able to go out there and I could get all the wood I needed for the winter fires, and there was always a leg of lamb or something available to us as well when we when occasionally. And I belonged to the tramping club there, and we tramped all over the mountains through there. And then Search and Rescue got hold of me, and so I became one of the four advanced people to go out on search and rescue stuff. The police would ring about 11 o'clock, usually on a Saturday night, and say, look, we've got somebody lost, the wife has rung in. And so I would go down to the police station. We would pinpoint where we thought the car would be or wherever the entry point had been for the person who was going shooting or whatever it was. And then I would take a transmitter. One person had a rifle, and then another one had a tent, and we all had some food as well. So we were equipped to stay out overnight or whatever it was. And when we
had sort of first aid and stretcher.
Yes, we had first aid and all that, yes. When we got into an area, we would travel for, say, 20 minutes or so and then fire a shot.
Yeah.
And if it had been a stalker, that's what we knew it was, then if we got within range...
Oh, so you mean you're following a trail?
Yes. Because we knew the walkways and trails and things pretty well by then. And so...
Did you have radios?
A transmitter.
Yeah.
A big, heavy one on my back.
So you could call in a helicopter or something?
No helicopters in those days.
Okay.
We would go in, and when we got as far as we could that night, usually about 11 o'clock, we would sort of bed down for the night, but I would wire back. I'd had to climb a tree to put a wire up somewhere. And with the transmitter, I could get back to the police station. And from there, they would decide whether or not to send out a bigger party next day. Or sometimes we found the fellow, and he'd shot a deer on, and it was wet or something like that, and he decided just to bed down under a tree somewhere. So we'd go in and we'd share his meat with him. But everybody then knew he was safe, so we would come on out with him.
Was it all a small community, so you'd know who the people were that you're looking for?
A lot of the time, yes. Yeah. They were either trampers or deer stalkers or some people that we knew. So I was a hunter as well at those days, so I knew, what was going on. And I joined also the Nelson Ski Club, so I spent quite a lot of time with Leslie as well. And the boys, we used to go up to Lake Rotowiti.
To Mount Robert.
Mm-hmm. And I used to ski on Mount Robert at that stage. Yeah. And had some wonderful trips. While I was there, during that time, we also got into hut building. And we prefabricated huts.
Yeah.
And so up in the Waihopo Valley, we prefabricated one for up there, and another one on the Fifth Basin on Mount Robert, right away, about 5 hours walk from the actual ski field.
So how developed were the you say ski field and huts and tracks and so on? Were they well established? No.
Yes.
Rope
toes in those days. You just hung onto a rope and.
Yeah, and accommodation?
Accommodation was up there, yes.
And how to go with the good roads up there?
No road.
Roads at all. So people would hike in with their skis.
The first trips I had were you got to Lake Rotowiti itself, and then we had to row There was no bridge over the Buller.
Oh, no.
So we had to row across the lake, usually at night, and then we had to walk the round about 5,000 feet up to the track up.
So how long did it take?
Carrying our skis.
Yes.
Exactly.
And the skis then were the sort of old, heavy,
long ones, yes.
Yes, okay.
And
what about the tracks then for hiking? Were they...
There were quite a few well-established tracks. The ones up the Travis Valley and so on. You could walk up there over to Rotorua.
Yeah.
All sorts of things like that. And Robert itself had good tracks right up. We dropped the Bristol people at the Air Force were very cooperative. And so when we prefabricated a hut... Yeah. They would, we would wrap it in sacks, and they would sort of make rough parachutes and push it off for us. We'd be up there with a fire going and smoke, and they would know exactly where to put it, so they'd come over and drop it.
Okay.
It was all very well, but on fifth day, they dropped our stove right through the tarn at the top, and that didn't help very much.
Yeah.
So that was it was an interesting 5 years there. At Blenheim, and
so if it was these things were dropped out of planes, were they the prefabricated hubs, were they damaged?
Oh, we had them wrapped in rubber tubes and things like that. Yes, there was some damage, but it saved us carrying a lot of stuff.
So at this stage, Leslie was going with you.
Sometimes,
the children. You left the children at home with her parents.
Yes, with mum and dad, with grandma.
Brilliant.
Yes,
yeah.
And. Anyway, at the end of 5 years there came an opportunity for an exchange to Australia. And I applied and got an exchange to Victoria in Australia. So that was a very big moment for us. So we had to pack up our house and all sorts of things like that, and luckily Leslie's mum and dad had decided to retire at that stage, and so the eldest son Ian, Leslie's brother, took over the farm while they came in and lived in our little cottage while they decided what they were going to do with themselves. And so we went to Victoria. We got over to Victoria. We went by ship, and we stopped at Sydney, and then the next one was Melbourne, where I got off. Leslie went on to Fremantle because she had a pen friend over there, and that pen friend, they kept going for just on 60 years, I suppose, until she died. And so that was a wonderful time. I went to the Victoria people, the education people there, and they talked to me and said, well, we've got a job at Frankston.
So you just went on the off chance of getting a job?
It was all guaranteed, you know, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And they had a house. What one of the things they wanted to do for us was to find somewhere where they had a schoolhouse. So they arranged for me to take over a schoolhouse at Crib Point, which was quite close to Frankston. And then I had a job at a school called Overport.
Okay. Did you find teaching Australian children very similar
quite
to New Zealand?
Quite different.
In what way?
Oh, yeah.
Well, they were in a more formal program with textbooks. We didn't have... I don't think we could afford them in New Zealand at the time, but they had...
Were they imported, you mean, or Australian textbooks?
Australian textbooks.
Okay.
Specially made for them. There was a whole reading series and a whole math series.
So in New Zealand you didn't have books to teach from?
No.
And you didn't import anything from England, or?
Well, we had a basic text that was probably from America.
Okay.
But it was a text, not an individual book for each child, which was was what they had in Australia.
And the spelling would be wrong as well, wouldn't it?
So anyway, we set up. We had a nice little situation there. Overport was growing, and some of the hard cases in the education department always used to write overproof instead of overport. So it was an interesting year. We had a year there. Leslie was at Crimpoint, and she did some relieving around the area, and also the children went to the local school, and
did it change them then, the way they spoke English?
Oh, or, yes, it was a little bit different, sport? Yeah. And then the school had to get more classes somewhere. They ran out of rooms, so they took over an old building up near the teachers' college, and there were three of us went there. There was a young teacher, myself, and a very experienced lady who'd been teaching the Aborigines for many years. So we had a lovely little trio. We used to have coffee whenever we felt like it, and it was like, again, a big family again.
Yeah.
And I immediately realised that there were a lot of children in the class. I didn't have a very big class, only about 20, 25 or something. Mm. And there were children there that were quite bright, and they were being held to this one level. And I talked about it to the principal, and he said, well, you do what you think you want to do. So I broke that up into groups again, like I've been used to doing in here. The kids, there was a sudden jump in their ability to read and do maths and things like that, and the principal was absolutely surprised, and he got the inspectors in, and then they had a look at what I was doing, and then next thing I knew, teachers' college in the area were there looking at what I was doing, and next thing I knew, they offered me a job at the college there. So I didn't know what to do. So I turned it down in the end, because I was under government super here, and there was all sorts of hitches like that.
Yeah, the pension scheme.
Yes. So after a year, in which I'd had the money to buy a second-hand Holden station wagon, which became a real joy to us, because we could put all the camping gear.
Yeah.
And on a weekend, we'd be off somewhere, and any school holidays, we'd be down to Adelaide, or we'd head up into the Snowy Mountains or somewhere like that. And so we had great times. I learned how to catch snakes, and got a terrible surprise when they took me rabbit hunting at one stage. And this was way up near Kundrook on the Murray River, and we got up there, and they got out a truck and put what I found out was a pump and a whole lot of hosing and then some wire, and off we went, and we came to a place where there was a canal area, irrigation channel, and then a big rabbit warren. And so out came the pump, they started the motor and put one end in the water, and the other end they put down the whole rabbit hole. Well, after about 15 minutes we could hear thump 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 down below, and next minute out came lots of very bedraggled looking rabbits. And these people there proceeded with a a waddy or stick and would just hit them and kill them. That was a different kind of rabbit shooting to what I'd been used to.
Yes.
And snake hunting was with tigers down on the other side of the Murray.
We snake would drive with down tigers.
Tiger snakes.
Ah, okay.
They were nasty ones.
Yeah.
And
so what did you do with them when you...
Well, what happened, they would drive down and they would see perhaps one out here somewhere, and so they would stop the car and get out, and one would sort of go towards the snake and the other one would go around behind it. And the one that went behind it usually had a lump of number 8 sort of wire. Mm-hmm. And when the snake sort of stood up, they'd whack him one. Mm-hmm. So, quite interesting.
And the idea was to reduce the number of snakes, or get the snakes.
They were just
or?
Pests, yes. Okay. Yeah. And we had, down where we were, there was a copperhead snake turned up one day, you know, around our the front door area.
Yeah.
Yes, it was quite a frequent occasion to have them. Of course, there was forest all around where we were. And this was where the naval base was, Crib Point Naval Base.
They're saying now, though, with the COVID pandemic and a lot of people in lockdown and staying in their homes, they're seeing snakes around more often, so the snake catchers are very busy. But they were there all the time. It's just they tend to avoid people anyway, so they're not necessarily a problem.
Yes, that's true. Yes. So it was a lovely year. I learned all about Australian rules rugby, and learned to barrack for Essendon at the time. The boys were all in red and black, and so we used to go to some of the matches, and that was very good. And we went skiing up on the snowy things like that. And I learned quite a lot at that time about summer camps or camps for children. The Australians had the idea that they would bring some of the children who were in inner areas out to the coast. And so they built a big camp to take a whole class, about 40 kids. And they had all aquariums and canoes and dinghies, all sorts of things. So the children were taught skills as far as the sea was concerned. They were taught to swim. They were shown all the various crustaceans and fiddlefish and everything like that. It was a very interesting sort of program. They were there for a week. And I thought, gee, we could do something like this in New Zealand. So that was in my mind. It came out later on. Anyway, at the end of the year, I was due back here, and there was a chance for a principal's position at a little school out of Featherston with both of us teaching. So I applied and got that.
So how old were your boys at this stage?
The boys were about 5, 6... and 4, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yes. And so we duly left Australia and came back to New Zealand again. Landed in Wellington and thought what a little town it was. After being in Melbourne all this time. So, and we drove out to this little school. We got back to into the Holden and drove over the Rimutakas down through Featherston, and we got eventually to this school called Kahautra. And we drove to the house. It had a house with it. And Leslie burst into tears when she saw the house. There was about 3 or 4 cattle beasts in the in the section, sitting on the veranda and so on. And that was pretty primitive. And so anyway...
But you told her no snakes.
No snakes. But anyway, the school was a nice school, and we got the section all settled, and the chairman of the school committee came, and he was really upset about all this, and Julie had a working bee and cleaned up all the section and fixed the fences and did everything like that. So it was a school of 81, and there were three of us there. For a start, there was only two, but we had, Leslie and I had 40 odd children between us each. And then it went over the required amount to get three teachers, and that was good. And then it became quite an interesting school, because the children arrived at 8 o'clock this morning off school buses on their way to Kurunui College. And so the children would all arrive at 8, and they wouldn't leave till 4 o'clock at night again when the bus came back. So I said, you know, I don't think I would have wasted this time. So we had a lovely pool. So in the summer, the children had to get out and do lengths. And so they would do perhaps 10 lengths before school started. And then I got a tennis club. There was a tennis court that had been abandoned, and I got that fixed up, and we played tennis. And I got one of the farmers to cut a 440 track for me around one of the paddocks. And so the children could do some running. And
440, you mean 440 yards? Or
yes.
400 metres.
400 yards. A quarter mile track.
Yes, yeah.
And then the next thing we knew that the mums were coming down and running it too. So that was very fast. So we got an A-grade tennis club going, and we played all over the South Wairarapa with that. That was good fun. And I got these kids going, and
did you find that having them doing the swimming lengths before class started, was that very good for their attention?
Yes, or? Well, they got very fit. And well, I used to put all sorts of games out for them too, the ropes and all sorts of things out there. And if it was wet, they came inside and went on with project work that they had that I'd assigned them, or they'd got sorted out themselves. They wanted to do painting or whatever, art, craft, any of those sort of things, extra reading. So we found that after 1 year of that sort of activity, these kids started to... there wasn't any other school anywhere near that could compete with us. They got so good at swimming and running and all that sort of thing. So it was very interesting, and it also worked academically, because the children that went on from us now, they suddenly found at Kurunui College that these children coming from my school were well advanced with what they needed. So that was good. And we had one funny occasion where gymnastics suddenly became the thing, and we didn't have any gear at all, and we didn't know what we wanted to try, and didn't know what to do. So we decided to use hay bales for horses for a start. And when a phys ed instructor came round and saw what we were doing, he said, "Oh," he said, "we've got to do something about this." And about a week later, I got a full set of gymnastic equipment that appeared on the scene.
Wow.
Well, we won the gymnastics that year. And one of the funny events was that...
So was who was trained to teach them the gymnastics then?
Well, I was teaching them.
Oh, so you knew... But you knew
what I knew was enough now to get them going. Yeah. And we were doing long horse stuff where the children... had a bounce board at the beginning, and they would hit that, and then they would do a spin and hit the board, and then do another spin off, you know, that sort of thing. And we had some fairly sturdy form 1 and 2 children there at the time, and poor old Sally, who was one of these girls, I was catching, and she tried something that was a bit more difficult than usual, and missed, and she hit me fair and square and knocked me cold. And the children said, "Oh, Sally's killed Mr. Clark," and they gone screaming over to the school to get Leslie. Well, you know, and of course that caused a panic over there, and they came rushing over to the hall where we were, and by that time I'd come to, I'd woke up. Was that all okay? But we had some fun at that school.
This is part 4. Listen next week for part 5. Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you're a fan of NPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.